Gather round, take a seat, relax. It's the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon, right here on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtzon. It's a privilege and an honor once again to be here with you this Tuesday. We're getting close to Rosh Hashanah. 6 weeks from today is first day of Rosh Hashanah. It's power. And hope we can bring together. I have some thoughts we'd love to talk today. Actually, it's thoughts I put into writing over the last few weeks and haven't really verbalized it. It's more in the writing. And as always, love feedback. Appreciate all feedback that possibly you can give to us. Contact Chai FM and send a message or use X, or you could bump into me as Moshi in Moshi's, which is where I get most of my feedback. Oh, I recognize your voice, Rabbi. Are you the guy from the radio? And as one person told me years ago, Rabbi, you have a face just perfect for radio. Anyway, so I'd love to explore a concept with you. And the concept really is the space between us. I think it's a very important concept that really explains a lot of issues that take place in relationships between people, and especially when there's a relationship between a mentor and a student, or even a rabbi in a community, or even spouse. And that's really like, what space do we have between us? You know, we've all been there. You walk away from a conversation with someone that everyone's raving about. They're supposed to be a mentor, a wise friend, a person who has all the answers, and somehow you meet them and it was underwhelming. They seem distracted, ordinary, like they're saving the best material for someone more deserving. And you walk out and you think to yourself, well, that was disappointing. Guess they're not as brilliant as everyone says. But what if we got it backwards? What if the problem wasn't them at all? You see, we live in a world obsessed with consuming wisdom, hunting down the right books, podcasts, mentors, and insights that will finally unlock our potential. But here's what we don't realize. Even when genuine wisdom shows up in our lives, we're often too busy performing our own intelligence to actually receive it. We're like people complaining about being thirsty while holding an umbrella in the rain. And there's an uncomfortable truth that we're not facing. We can spend years seeking the right people while being completely unreachable ourselves, looking for teachers while being unteachable. Maybe you'd say it's like searching for a restaurant while wearing a do not serve sign around our neck. And that's really what I want to explore, this idea of not are we finding the right people to guide us and teach us and inspire us and build a relationship, but are we the right people that if they were ready to inspire, we would receive it? See, we invest considerable energy in identifying the right people. We research the perfect mentor, chase down the most connected friend, hunt for the teacher who will finally help everything click. We go to courses, we read their books, follow their social media, and convince ourselves that if we could just get 15 minutes of their time, our lives would transform. But do we consider this? If someone extraordinary did show up tomorrow with something genuinely valuable to offer, would we actually be able to receive it? Think about the last time we sat across somebody with real experience and the potential to guide us. Did we arrive curious and open? Or did we show up already half convinced they wouldn't understand our unique situation? Were we present and engaged? Or were we internally running commentary about their outdated methods, their privileged perspective, their inability to grasp the complexities of our modern challenges? Yeah, we were polite. We nodded at appropriate moments. We asked thoughtful questions and thanked them graciously. Shkoyach Rav. But underneath the surface courtesy, there's often this invisible script that says, this person doesn't get it. They're too old-fashioned. Easy for them to say, they haven't walked in my shoes. And we are walking around with that judgment. And the devastating truth is, that the person talking to us could feel it every single time. Anyone with basic emotional intelligence can read the space between two people. They sensed our subtle resistance, our quiet evaluation, and predetermined conclusions about their relevance to our lives. And automatically, they hold back. Not because they wanted to withhold wisdom and guidance, but because they had to. The ear had grown too heavy with judgment for real insight to flow. We never gave them a chance. We were so busy protecting ourselves from being influenced by someone we'd already decided wasn't worth our full attention that we missed the very wisdom we claimed to be seeking. And that's what I mean with the space between us. You know, I'm sitting at a radio now in front of a microphone. I'm talking. And you could either agree or disagree. Some of you listen every week. For some of you, it's maybe the first time you're listening to this oak. And you're wondering, okay, what's he on about? But fundamentally, the only way we can engage two people, and the irony, not the irony, but the complexity of a platform of radio is I have no idea who I'm talking to. I have a basic sense because, you know, get feedback from different people, but I don't know specific people. But even though we don't know each other, on the most part, there's a space between us, and that space is created by me. In other words, if I'm showing up to this, for bringing to the show with arrogance, then there's one energy. If I'm showing with humility, if I'm showing with passion, I'm showing with preaching at people, whichever energy I'm showing up with, that's the energy I'm showing up with. And then the person listening is showing up with their energy, which is either receptive, hesitant, cautious, judgy, bored. And the moment this energy, the space between us is created, it's almost impossible for either of us to cross the divide. Because even though, again, in radio, we often don't know each other, there's still a space. There's always a space. Every time two people engage, there's a space between us. And that space is literally the greatest determiner on whether we can impact one another, whether a relationship can be built, whether information can flow from one person to the other and it can be received. Because if the space is toxic, if the energy is toxic, you could have two incredible people, but the space between them doesn't work, and true bonding and true transformation will never take place between the people. But when both of us show up with humility, when both of us show up with an energy that says, I'm trying my best, I would love to hear what you have to say, then we can actually engage one another. And that's really what I want to do for the rest of the show after playing for you this song called Trying My Best by Mordechai Shapiro that just came out a few months ago. It's, can we explore this idea of the space and the scripts we run between us to make sure that not only between, you know, you and I, but in every space that we'll show up to, that we could create space to allow ourselves to connect and stop only judging the person we're going into. In other words, when we have an interaction, don't only reflect on who they were, but maybe ask ourselves, did I create the space for them to be the best version of themselves? Because that's something really worth exploring. We cannot expect people to be their best version of themselves if we are showing up with judgment, if we are showing up with agendas, if we're showing up with some form of unhealthy, unhumble space. It's not just the other person. It's often us. It literally takes two to tango. This is Trying My Best by Mordechai Shapiro on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM, and we're talking today about the space between us, and would love to explore, continue to explore this idea, where basically two people always create a space. Like sometimes a space closes between two people before anyone even speaks, because we've already written the story, decided who the person across from us is, and what they can or cannot possibly offer. Someone as sophisticated as ourselves. We've all done it. the young professional dismissing the older businessman because he doesn't understand the digital economy and probably still uses a flip phone, the experienced leader writing off the younger colleague because they haven't earned their stripes and don't understand how things really work, the husband who stops listening genuinely to his wife because we've had this conversation 1,000 times and she never says anything I haven't already considered. We do this everywhere, not just with people. We do it even with entire traditions. How many have decided that Judaism, with 4,000 years of accumulated wisdom from Moshe Rabbeinu, the Talmudic sages, and minds that shaped civilization itself, has nothing relevant to offer our modern, progressive, sophisticated lives? Sure, we'll call the rabbi to bury grandma and officiate at weddings, maybe even grab a seat for Rosh Hashanah. But real wisdom, life guidance, we'll get that from the latest guru who had his breakthrough while floating in a sensory deprivation tank last Tuesday. It's fascinating. We belong to a people that somehow managed to evoke both intense respect and inexplicable hatred from the world, till today. A tiny nation that has influenced human thought far beyond its numbers. People seem to see something in us that we often don't see in ourselves. And yet, how many of us are walking past our own inheritance, dismissing the very tradition that produced wisdom everyone else is trying to copy and rebrand? We so easily assimilate and become the last branch in the Jewish tree without realizing 1 second, is it not worth giving it another chance? It's like being born into a family that owns the world's greatest library and choosing to get our education from fortune cookies instead. And the same pattern plays out everywhere. A quiet script that runs in our heads that says, I know everything, I'm the expert. And the other person, they have nothing to offer me. And just like that, the space between us, the ear, grows thick with condensation. Not because there's genuinely no potential for connection, but because we've assigned the roles before the conversation even begins. In other words, you could have the most inspiring rabbi show up and offer the best what Judaism has to offer, which is a lot. But if you've already decided that Judaism has nothing to offer you and Rosh Hashanah speeches are there to put you to sleep or just to gossip about at the dinner after, then there's nothing that can be said that will move you because the space has blocked it. The real tragedy is how much wisdom we miss because we're so invested in being the most intelligent person in the room. We really think that we're smarter than our grandparents and the sages, right? I mean, granny doesn't know how to use a phone, so I must be much smarter than her because I know how to develop an app. Okay. Really? We'd rather be right than be taught. We'd rather protect our ego than expand our understanding. If I could use the library analogy again, it's like going to a library and spending the whole time telling books why they're wrong instead of reading them. Our sages understood something profound many years ago in Pirkei Avot and Ethics of Our Fathers when they taught, make for yourself a mentor. Not wait for the perfect mentor to appear like some wisdom fairy godmother. Make one. Choose someone real, someone who knows more than us in at least one area of life, and permit them to mean something to us. And our sages understood something that we often miss, that mentorship isn't magic. It's not a wisdom vending machine where we insert our questions and receive perfectly packaged insights that could become a 60-second YouTube short. It's chemistry. It's the delicate balance between someone who has something to offer and someone who has created the conditions to receive it. We can sit in the same room as someone incredibly wise, someone with decades of hard-won experience. And if we arrive with subtle resistance, nothing meaningful happens. The insights are there. The willingness to share is there, but the space won't allow it because we've made it impossible for an authentic connection to take place. But then there are those moments, those magical moments, when someone walks into a conversation, into an engagement, with genuine openness, authentic curiosity, and no hidden agenda except to learn. I had that today. Sat across somebody I never met before, and there was this instant, it actually happened twice today. It's only 1 o'clock, 1:30 in the afternoon, and two people I sat across to today, there was both incredible engagement because we both showed up with openness and curiosity and no hidden agenda. And something comes alive in the room. Ideas surface that neither person expected. The conversation becomes more than the sum of its parts because both people have created space for something real to happen. I could say that as a rabbi, it happens all the time. Sometimes I feel my creativity flow and I'm able to hopefully be on point, and sometimes not. And now it's not always the receiver. Sometimes I had a bad night's sleep or I have something going on in my personal, you know, headspace that's not exactly helping me flow. But often the difference between an incredible engagement and an average to subpar engagement is the space between the two of us. We're sitting across the table from each other. And if the person's showing up and like they see the best version of me and I see the best version of them, then both of us can create this incredible flow of ideas and insights. But if the other person sees a version of me which is not authentic and that space is no longer natural, I'm either being underestimated or overestimated, which, by the way, are equally dangerous. When someone has this like underestimation, where they totally think you're useless, then it's very hard to show up to that space and really prove yourself. And in general, trying to prove yourself is a very uncomfortable thing. And then there's overestimated, where someone says, oh my gosh, you're amazing. And then like, they're not seeing you as human. They're seeing you as something inauthentic to who you are. And both times, we've all had that. We've all had people that will underestimate us and overestimate us. And in both spaces, it's very uncomfortable because we're not meeting where we are. We've been in those kinds of conversations. We've been in conversations where people seem to bring out the best in everyone around them. They're often the quietest in the room, the ones who don't need to control the conversation or impress anyone with their intelligence. They're simply present, genuinely interested, and secure enough to make space for others' thoughts to matter. And we've all been in the other conversations, the ones we can feel ourselves becoming careful, guarded, performing rather than connecting, where the other person seems to be taking mental notes, evaluating, waiting for us to prove our worth. And the energy shifts subtly. Everyone becomes more cautious. And the real insights get buried under politeness. It's the difference between a warm conversation amongst friends and a formal job interview. Same people, completely different dynamic. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, what space are we creating to receive? And what space are we creating to give? If you're sitting with your child and they're not willing to hear a word you're saying, don't ask yourself only if what you're saying is right or wrong, or how you're marketing it, how you're presenting it. Ask yourself, is there a healthy space? Is there trust? If there's no trust, then you could prepare the best presentation ever and it will fall flat. You're trying to get your spouse to understand something which is really important to you. Fine. But how's the space? Is the space trust? Is the space tired? Is the space high energy? Chances are nothing will really flow in that space, even if you are 100% right. And what's interesting is I brought this idea up to many people and will say, but Rabbi, it's not my problem, I have the space. I have to bring over this idea. You know, like, or a rabbi was sort of saying, I have to teach my community this message regardless. No, because if nobody's open to hear it, you're wasting your time, you're burning political capital, you're burning relationship capital on an idea that's falling flat. The most investment we have to do with one another as two people is creating space that allows things to flow. A community is a space. A family is a space. And you've all done it. You've all walked into a family, into a home, and you can't explain it, but you just feel that the space is flowing and safe. And you've walked into other homes where you feel that the energy is stiff, judgy, rigid, toxic, unhealthy. And it's often subtle. It's not only the way the people are talking to each other, but you just feel. We all can. Some of us are maybe more energy intuitive than others, but fundamentally we could all feel safe or unsafe. And chances are we'll keep on going to places that make us feel safe and seen, and we'll avoid places that make us feel unsafe and unseen. So yes, we have to continue seeking people who can help us grow. Let's find those rare individuals who challenge us gently, speak truth with love, and invest in our development without expecting anything in return. But let's not make the mistake of thinking that finding the right people is the only part that matters. But rather, we have to ask ourselves the more interesting question. Who do we become when someone wise shows up in our lives? Do we make them feel safe being real with us? Or do we make them feel like they need to audition for our approval? What if we would change the way we approach meaningful conversations and just show up with curiosity rather than focusing on what we need to protect ourselves from? What if we showed up curious about their perspective instead of defensive about our own? When we bring genuine warmth into a room and openness, when we create a space where people can breathe, think, and even be wrong without losing our respect, something remarkable happens. People step into themselves. They share insights they might not have even known they had. And we stop missing the wisdom that was right in front of us all along. Because here's what's funny. We don't just find the wisdom we're seeking. When we create the right conditions and become the kind of people others feel safe to be real with, we become the kind of people that wisdom actively seeks out. See, mentors, listeners, they were always here. But sometimes they were just waiting for the space to breathe. This is Rabbi Levi Avtson, and this is 101.9 Chai FM, and this is for our Bring and Show every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Yeah, it's been going on for many, many years. Please God for many more. And this is the music time that we play, you know, every show. What are we going to be listening to? We're going to be listening to a gorgeous song, Gufu Neshama, from Yaakov Shweki, but it's his edition. The version that he does as a live concert with Amir Dadon, one of the most incredible voices in Israeli music. And it's in Hebrew, but you could feel the power of the song. This is Gufa Neshama on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
So this is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson of Linksfield Shul, and we're here on the Fabringen Show every Tuesday from 1 to 2 in the afternoon. And today we're talking about the space between us and how any two human beings create a space before they actually flow between one another. And we don't focus on that space, right? If a marriage is taking strain and one spouse will tell the other, I don't like the way you talk to me that way. It's not just the words. It's what those words imply. And those words imply whatever that space between us says. In other words, if two people feel very safe with one another, then that safety allows certain things to be said because there's trust. But if there's no trust, then everything is already more tense, dense, heavy, and complex. And it won't land the same way. And by the way, this is one of the reasons that I feel like while, you know, having a great YouTube teacher or podcast or even a radio show is great. It never replaces the personal interaction we need to have with a teacher, with a friend, with a mentor. Virtual relationships and virtual teaching is not the same. See, you could walk out of an incredible shiur or show feeling like you've just glimpsed the blueprint of becoming your best self. Insights were profound. The delivery's flawless and something deep inside of you shifted. And you say, you know what? This is it. This time is going to be different. But by Thursday, you're snapping at your kids again. There's something puzzling that happens when we're learning for a while. most moving classes, the ones that left us feeling genuinely transformed in the moment, somehow don't reshape our actual life. A week later, we find ourselves back in the same patterns, wrestling with the same struggles, fundamentally unchanged from the version of ourselves we were before that powerful learning experience. It's not that the learning wasn't extraordinary. The teacher could have been brilliant. The concepts were profound and real. We genuinely felt something shift, and yet somehow, between that moment of inspiration and the reality of our daily living, something essentially, or something essential, gets lost in translation. We've all experienced this gap between being moved by Torah and being changed by it. But maybe the problem isn't the quality of what we're learning, but how the transformation actually works. You know, the space between two people will determine, even when genuine wisdom shows up in our lives, we can be busy performing our own intelligence to actually receive it. And the space needs to be clear of judgment and ego. But then there's another thing, and that is even when we are open, even when we show up genuinely ready to be moved, we can still confuse the taste of insight with the work of transformation. And that's because we're missing the one ingredient that we spoke of a few minutes ago that makes everything possible, especially change: safety. Not just any relationship, not just connection or even love, but the specific kind of security that allows a person to drop their defenses, stop managing their image, and then allows them to access the wisdom that's already inside of them, waiting to emerge. When a person feels safe, they become the best version of themselves. You know, think about safety in God. Think about bitachon, trusting in Hashem. When someone has that complete sense of security and deep knowing that we are supported by Hashem's caring hands, something shifts within our own inner landscape. We cease to be overwhelmed by anxiety and the desire to control. Instead, we create space where divine guidance can genuinely reach us. The trust truly opens us to hear what was genuinely beyond our reach. And the same principle applies in human relationships. When someone feels genuinely secure with us, not just loved or respected, but truly safe from judgment, manipulation, or abandonment, they can finally cease defending themselves. And that is when their innate wisdom emerges. That is when they can truly receive guidance rather than deflect it. So when we bring this genuine openness to learning, when we create space where people can breathe and think, something remarkable occurs. But here's the fact: not all teaching can fill that space equally. Because even the most receptive student can fall into a trap, consuming wisdom without the friction of relationship. See, when we learn alone, no matter how brilliant the source or how open we are, we still act as the editors of our own spiritual growth. We absorb ideas that resonate with us, stay on the radio and keep on listening, or we can overlook the ones that hurt. We nod in agreement with insights about humility, while avoiding the specific ways that we are still arrogant. We agree with teachings on kindness, but ignore our actual tone with our family. Everyone believes that charity, tzedakah, is important, but we can avoid the fact that we spend more on our flights to Mauritius than our charity over the whole year. That's what we do. It's not being dishonest. It's human nature. We can genuinely be teachable and still miss the mark if the learning never becomes personal enough to confront our blind spots. And that confrontation, the real kind that leads to change, only occurs in an environment where we feel secure enough to be honest about where we actually stand. And that's why Torah was never meant only to be a broadcast. The radio, Chai FM show, it's an incredible opportunity, but it's not everything. Even Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't carry the nation alone. When he reached his limit, Hashem didn't send him more content. He gave him 70 elders. He put mentors there, people who weren't just wise, but close. People who could create the safety needed for real guidance to land. It wasn't just 70, it was many, many more. And therefore, my argument is that we have to create relationships with our local teachers, our local mentors, our local guides, our local rabbi, our local rebbetzin. You have to belong to a shul. And you have to develop a relationship of receiving and engaging. We all need it. There's nobody. The rabbi himself has to find someone that he feels that level of safe to receive from. It's not some form of pyramid with anyone on the top, but rather it's all people finding a way to really engage and receive. And I've told it to people in my shul that, you know, not everyone will connect with everybody's energy. And if someone comes to a shul and they don't connect with that rabbi and they're not showing up with judgment, somehow the energy, just the space between them doesn't work. I know some rabbis wouldn't like this. I would tell the person to go find another shul. Find someone that you do connect with. It's okay. We don't all connect to one another. Doesn't mean one person's bad and one person's good. But if the space between two people is not safe and the space between two people is not really allowing for transformation to take place, then we have to create that with somebody who we could find that space with. Because otherwise we'll never really change. We'll never really be open to move as long as the space is toxic. In order for there to be growth in a person's life, they have to show up to a space that allows them to be the best version of themselves. And they have to show up with an attitude of being the best version of themselves. And when you find that place, that's all you need. You don't need to go run around to every single lecture in this town, although they're very cute. And you don't have to watch 400 YouTube rabbis and another 500 podcasts. Right? Today, we're consuming more knowledge than ever, but we're not any wiser necessarily. Quantity is not necessarily quality. Find your teacher. Find your person. Find your guide. Find your friend. And even though they might not be as eloquent as the most eloquent YouTuber out there, they will change your life by the power of the space between you. That's my argument. My argument is you won't get changed by another inspirational weekend or another incredible international speaker, which are all lovely and, you know, I wish them well and they should make a good parnasa, should make a good living. You want to be changed? Find someone you connect to and then invest in that relationship. Learn from them, even if it's not as eloquent and packaged as the best teacher out there. But they will change your life by the power of the space between you.